All right. Well, so my question is, why do you get that smirk, Melissa, when we want to have this conversation on purity and purity culture?
I think I get the smirk because it's so counterintuitive to our natural nature.
When did you become aware of that? Do you remember? Was there a time or a time frame or something where you're like, man, they're telling me this, but I'm sensing this?
Actually, I think I wasn't as aware of it until I started getting into more menstrual health, and I'd gone out to a summit in Salt Lake City, and it was the first time I'd ever been kind of around like viewing female sexual health through the lens of like a Mormon lens, or how do we have these conversations? There's a lot of Mormon population out there. Honestly, it was actually through that where I was in this group where it was like, how do we discuss things like
What
under
group
Mormon?
was this that was going to Utah to discover female sexual health?
Was the Rocky Mountain Sexual Sex Summit. And Dr. Laura Brydon, who wrote The Pure to Repair Manual, was presenting. And so that's what made me there. And it was a 2-day all female presenters discussing things around menstrual health.
Wow,
And
how did you discover this? I'm so interested
it was
in this.
right before pre-COVID. It was the most amazing weekend. I just found out that she was coming to the US and was going to be presenting. So I was like, I must go to this. And it
Jeez
walked through
Louise.
females. Everyone got to walk through their own contraceptive journey from like, when was the first time you used, took the pill
Wow.
or used
That's awesome.
condoms. Everyone. So it was a very interactive, great weekend, but it was also, put on by a group that works with a lot of women who are Mormon. And so, actually talking about the issues around sex within in married couples, in dating, in purity culture, and how that a lot of the negative impacts can
So
come from that.
it's well known, in case you want to understand my smirking, it's well known that, the whole planet doesn't go to Utah to discover these whole like newfound ideas on sex and sex culture. I mean, that's the so is it was it like a dissident? These are a bunch of dissidents that were like, listen, we want to tell you the truth of like us breaking the mold of like multiple wives with one person. Homosexuality is a sin. Caffeine will put you in the in purgatory. Like, work with me a little bit there. How did that all land in Salt Lake?
It is, there's a clinic there that does like a lot of relationship counseling. And so, how we can have these conversations still in a safe space for a lot of women that can't talk about these things.
Okay, so
And a
it is
lot
a
of
reactionary social thing that happened largely to the belief and practices as a general whole what's going on in the state.
Yeah, because there's also like, beyond just the stuff we'll get into today, we start talking about like hygiene issues that can occur again from some of these restrictive garments that women wear and these extra layers that they have to wear in different climates or in the heat or in the summer when it's like what's been deemed appropriate and inappropriate clothing and some of the other stuff that can come along with that.
Okay, so that was your insight into it. As you said, I think menstrual health kind of questioning. Is this just because you've kind of peaked in your mental capabilities and understanding around that kind of stuff, like more recently? Or is it just like time's turning over and you're like, okay, these are the things I got to be thinking about?
I think time's changing.
Okay. Got it. Because I was going to say the purity thing came up to me with those feelings, deep in my loins, like Will Ferrell would say, in my loins. When I was a young age and thinking like, there is no explanation out there for that. Like the places to find the explanation for the feelings that I was having. And where I sat on an unknown language of a sexual urge continuum, like we talked about previously, right? Like some people are hyper, some are hypo, but there's a continuum of people with sexual urges and libidos and et cetera, right? And you and I respect that conversation tremendously because we know how it leads to individualization of the topic we're going to discuss today. But that was the time when I started thinking about it. But then I looked, you know, just slightly outside of that, which should teach a whole lot of people around my biases of, you know, my thoughts on religion creating poison to a whole bunch of things in society, or poisoning a whole bunch of things in society. And the way that I think about that largely comes from that. At that time, it was the only thing right next to me was like, these are the books and the people that I need to follow based upon having absolutely no answers to what. So their only answer to that was like, don't think about those things. And if you continue to act upon those things, it will lead you to this at the end of your 85 years of life and existence. So at 13 or 12, you know, when things are significantly changing, and it may point us in a trajectory for today as to who really we'll be talking about as those formative years to discuss those kind of concepts and ideas and all the things that surround that. But that was my time when I tried to get a hold of those things.
I think I was really lucky, or I feel like I'm very fortunate to grow up in a slightly more liberal area where I never had to deal with those feelings, right? Of having shame around like exposure or a male gaze on me, making me feel like that I was doing something wrong or I was being impure. Mm-hmm. And so I think I am very fortunate in that sense of like, you know, you got in trouble, like you had the short length, but it was never, your shorts have to be a certain length. Otherwise you're going to hell. Yeah. Like the context around it was just like a little bit different in the part of the Bay Area that we grew up in. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think it is very dependent on geography and where you're kind of like, where you grow up and what the culture is in your area.
Yeah, I will get into that in like us having a, you know, coming up with ideas as to what leads to those, you know, like what are some of the big picture things that can lead to that. And I did take that down. It was role modeling of the family, geography, the time in modernity determines that, you know. I was born in 1974. You were born later than that. 87, right? Yeah, it's the same age as my brother, mm-hmm. which is a great actual example of not just the particular topic today, but of how 13 years can be a tremendous variance in society, what people think, how they were raised, their quote unquote, what you said, your accessibility to what is actually happening right now, you know, which is probably a conversation for another time. I don't actually consider it either a liberal or conservative thing. It's just that that's where those beliefs occur. It's generally in that area, the neck of the woods, where those people will gather. So it actually is like an energy that people will move towards, and they just end up being in that quote unquote lane. But that's besides the point. So anyways, I just wanted to hone on that for a starting point. And I don't know if you feel that way of, you know, for the conversation around purity today, and, you know, let's call it purity culture, but I think it is important for us to really reflect upon how we came to believe what we believe and at what time were those intricate moments. And the reason why I wanted to assume that you did too, was that I think this is where we actually can have, like you and I, a specific impact with our words and specific impact with the people that we teach and the people that are around us and in our community. Because there could be someone listening in who's a coach of an adult who does have a kid who's preteen or is just out of that teenage level that could specifically learn from this coach on some of the things we'll talk about, you know, as to like, what are the conversations that you can have on a biological, physiological, natural, human natural lens that gets people past this, this area. Yeah. Yeah. Is there any place, just because I took it down as a note, is there any connection to the Bama something or other? Bama Boom, what's it called?
The Bama Rush.
Bama Rush? Is there any interconnectors to this thing today besides the end result of the, I'll just language it as a conservative thinking and ideology and traditional conservative ideology that gets slapped inside of that? That's the only way I'm seeing it as a connection to purity, because in my thoughts, I think that the language around purity was created by man, but religion was also created by man. And I do think that's where quote unquote rules came from, societal rules for what is and what is not pure or impure. And so that's why I wrote down as a note, is there a connector there to the Bama cult, Bama thingamajiggy, Bama Rush?
Yeah, I like.
Like, are we going to get a whole host of, I'm just generalizing now, okay? A whole host of females landing in that group that comes from a quote unquote strictly, pseudo pure culture.
I think it was like there's like a combination of it because they're even in like dress style and the way they did all the like right Bama Rush, you had all these different days you had to be dressed in all these different your outfits and your dresses. There was definitely two different segments of girls you would see. There were very ones that were dressed long dresses, right? Like when we started talking about dress code and things like that. I think some of it's just for show. Right, going back to this like traditional culture, but the girls are still wearing a lot of like makeup that wouldn't be considered traditional or very like pure in that sense and style. And then there were some that are very traditional where we're going to still see like a purity ring and all like, you know. So I think it's a combination of the two.
So I can't pull those things together, although I would theorize that, it's something to think about. I think that that idea arises from all those females being told from the time they're 12 to 18, they're not educated on hymen rupture, or they're not educated on benefits of self-pleasure. They're not educated on multiple orgasmic sensations in the vaginal area. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm gonna bring I could bring up more third rail conversations, but throwing sexual objects in there is being another third rail conversation. But you see what I'm saying? I think that the lack of discussion around that between 12 and 17 years of age will lead to those. That's why I was trying to connect. I could be wrong on that, but that's my theory based upon it. So what does make me ask a question inside there then is your thoughts on, if, and we'll just use dress code as one example, because my daughters go through that. So they have friends who are at a local high school where there's uniforms. Now, the reason why I'll pause on that is that, you would the main conversation between adults is that they want these uniforms so that there isn't any of this impurity in action. Yet I look at the female skirts and I'm like, man, I would have bent over backwards as a 14-year-old young male to say, yeah, that's exactly what I think we should be wearing as uniforms. That's a secondary thing, okay? But then they do have, some quote unquote code of conduct for dressing in their middle schools, or I know that Hannah and Chloe did, right? Like, you had to have, three fingers on a strap, shoulder, waist, belly could only show so much, like some cuts in your pants had to be a certain area, whatever, right? That's besides the point. If someone wants me to dig in a whole lot further, I can. But so your initial thoughts on that? Because how do you find the balance between what we innately know. I just told you there's like millions of young men at 14 years of age with these thoughts on their head. Like that's an innate, thought process that you should not, I'll say you should not repress either in the home or publicly and socially. We could talk afterwards how to create action upon that. But how do you find a balance in that? Like these natural human things that will occur with that young male. Do you see what I'm saying? But if you allow the whole thing to open up, i.e., and let's just say for extreme measures, females could wear whatever they want, right? Free to wear whatever they want. Do you think that will play out to be much better? And do you think we'll have some like purity or impurity discussion in there?
Yeah, I think it's really fascinating with the uniforms, right? Because there's like multiple ways we can look at that. There's some schools that a uniform can allow everyone to be equal, and we cannot look at social status or economic status when everyone has to wear the same outfit.
Well, that's what they tell the kids why they're doing
Yeah,
it.
they tell the kids, right? But
But
then we end up,
background, you agree with, do you agree with me? Background, that's not why they do it.
in, right? We go back to what is like most eroticized. It's like schoolgirl outfits and skirts. Versus in a school where you wear shorts and shirts that, three-length tank tops. Yeah, so to your question of it, would there be less impurity if we could just wear whatever we want to wear? Is that your question?
Pretty much, but I just want you to tiptoe through it. Not, it's not like a gotcha that I got an idea on it. It's just like, well, I don't know. Well, how do we find some like quote unquote standards of social operating procedures, but knowing these innate things that will go on in our head, right? Knowing, just thinking about the 14-year-old young male, right? Listen, for some it may not be, but for a lot it is. Okay, so let's just say that is the
Well, we're
case.
still
Like how
gonna, I'd say for then, the reality is it just comes down to education, because at that age bracket, girls are going to develop breast, whether she's wearing a uniform or a tank top or a t-shirt. We are gonna notice changes in the opposite sex, right? We're gonna notice a shift in hips. So I think like whether that girl is wearing a pair of shorts, jeans, sweats, or a uniform skirt, these things are all going to become apparent. So I don't think the clothing matters.
Yeah, what I was trying to decide on there is like, I guess let me make it a little. I don't know why I smile at that. You know why I smile is because I'm still healing my brain over the shame that was put upon me to feel a certain way about a female that I'm thinking about right now in high school. Like I actually couldn't function in the day. Like I'd have to turn away, Anyways. So that's why I'm smirking on the idea. And her name was Tracy. And I'll just leave it at that. And anyone listening in from Multi, I said it before. Listen, Tracy, I used to like almost go unconscious when you come in with a tube top on. No, but see, that's my point. I just said it, right? So do you see where so there is a difference though between a t-shirt and a supportive bra and a tube top. So you see that's what I'm trying to draw is this. Is this natural inclination for human societies as well? If a t-shirt is fine and a tube top is fine as well, what do you think people will choose, right? Because there are females as well that are sure hyposexual. Yeah, they won't do that. But there's some that actually don't mind. And for listen, I'm saying they have full, I my deepest belief is they have should have full freedom to do all of that. Let it almost fall out with a tube top or whatever. There's some females that are like, I kind of enjoy that. I kind of enjoy having others see that. And I won't even get into the darkness around their enjoyment around older males seeing them do that. That's a whole conversation. Jeremy Irons, Lolita, movie book conversation another time. But so that's what I was trying to draw there is the tough job that administrators and educators have on deciding what is pure and impure. And that's why I think a lot of them just, they're like, listen, we don't want to put up with all the shit. So we're just going to say uniform standards and here's clothing standards. But you and I, we need to discuss, I think, this, like, well, are there lines to draw? And of
Well, we
course, I
can,
know
right? Like, that's like,
males and females are going to be treated differently. That's one area we can bring up as well.
generations, right? It's like the generations version of like burning the bras. It's like, is it inappropriate for a girl to come into school with a t-shirt on but no bra? It fits the dress code. She's not exposed, but the shirt's very tight and she's wearing a white shirt and there's no bra, right? Do we have to, or can we impose a rule that says girls have to wear bras in high school?
I wouldn't have, listen, I'm telling you, I would have ended up not going to school. Like, I honestly would not be able to have functioned. I'm not lying to you when I say that. Like, I would not be able to function. You could talk all you want about chemistry or physics or whatever, but if that was in eyesight when I was younger, no bueno. And I'm not saying no bueno as in it should be an infringement on her rights. I'm saying, like, listen, I just can't function. So you see what I'm saying? It's in that case there, though, that's important because it's not a burden. It's not her burden. Do you see? It's mine. It's mine and my eyesight. And so that was, I was trying to find the middle ground between this, what I would call, and this enters into our conversation on modernity, because the current 15, 16-year-olds have so many visions already captured in their head of these things, that really is my questioning worth it at all? Do you know what I mean? Like, are you picking up what I'm asking there? It's like they get to see all of it anyways. So if it happens in school, who cares about tube tops? Like, who honestly cares? Because that guy can, quote unquote, the 15-year-old James today in school, listen, they can see that 12 times over before breakfast. So this is where, I guess, yeah, that was my questioning. And any thoughts on that? Any differences in your.
Yeah, I guess maybe that is like the biggest shift now, right? It's just like the accessibility is like so much more prevalent today than it was then. Or not. I don't know. I mean, you have like,
Prevalence of, I meant prevalence of, I would agree with you, I meant prevalence of the ability of a young brain to see sexual images.
yes, that's.
Well, are you questioning that? I think it's like
I'm saying it's just,
unbelievably apparent.
it's just that's the difference of now versus
Yes.
then.
Yes. Right. Yes.
And even again before, without the technology age, it was even then, even if you're finding a magazine or a catalog or, the jokes of like the Sears or the JCPenney's catalog lingerie, what you were seeing then versus what you can see now
Did
is
I
like.
say this before? How did you know that I could have been looking at that? Did I mention this
I
previously?
mean, my boyfriend always like, always said he was lucky because his dad had Playboys and not just the JCPenney. It's like, he was really unique of his friends because he had that. But even now, but that's like
Oh,
completely different
Sears
because
catalogs.
now it's like today you have like Skims, which is Kim Kardashian's like clothing and lingerie line that has bras that have nipples that are actually like imprinted on the bra, so it looks like when you're wearing a t-shirt that you always have like hard nipples showing. This is a bra that you can purchase now. So like, I mean,
So I guess inside of
one of
there are
the boys
aspects of
brand.
true freedoms, right?
Yeah.
But, and this is the interesting thing, right? Is like the loss of purity results in what? Do you see that? It becomes like, how do a million young men, grow up to appreciate their partner's female body realistically for the next 50 years? This is what I'm not, this is where I guess I don't have the connection, and maybe I shouldn't take that upon my brain to actually have to come up with an idea to fix that, but I don't see it going anywhere but worse, in my opinion, for that, in how males and females view one another in the future. If by the time they're 29, their brain is completely trashed for what is a false sense of the opposite sex and its body and its workings and all the wonderful biological constraints that are inside of that. I think that's where that's the brain breaking thing that I have. So then this is why we have the conversation today. Well, then what is purity? Does it exist? I wrote down some words that are next to it, that kind of drum up some ideas of thoughts. Innocence, right? And how innocence can carry over into multiple, pieces of language. Innocence of not knowing about these things at different times in your life are actually a good thing, right? So in an extreme measure, when you're 13 and seeing extreme, like really aggressive digital pornography, not good for a brain. It's like it's unequivocal, it's well accepted in society and all sciences and et cetera, not good for a brain, especially if it's a constant flow of that stuff at unlimited access for a long period of time. So that's what I mean by innocence. There is an aspect of innocence for that young brain. Another word that comes up is naivety, which does connect to that, of this, there's certain things in the brain that just takes a whole lot of time to kind of comprehend. And when you're at a developing brain level, 12, 13, 14, 15 years of age, it is a naive brain. Like it doesn't really know what it's seeing, right? So you could see something happening politically, like online on a news station, and really think that's happening. Yet, like the 55-year-old is like, interesting, these little spin masters here are spinning this story based upon their guy and what the, you know what I'm saying? Like I have the brain. So the other brain is naive to these things, right? So those are the things that come up for me in terms of words. Anything on that that are additional words that you thought of with regards to purity? And I think why I'm asking that, so there's two questions in there, other words, but also, is this impure or pure conversation? Should it really just be focused in that preteen kind of teen nurturing area? Or is it worthwhile like discussing it to a whole bunch of adults? When really, I don't even know what change can occur besides them having kids and
I mean, for me, the other words that still come up when I hear it, like for purity is like just negatives. I can't help but like still correlate like fear and shame. Fear and shame, right? Like pure. It's like if because even in that innocence and naive brain, you're gonna start feeling things or right, that first like sensation as a girl of like, oh, this feels good. And associating a good feeling as being bad. Like there's female comedians that make the jokes of like rubbing up, or within Ted Lasso, where she like talks about rubbing up all over the couch because it felt good, right? But like, right, that's so innocent. It was just like a kid doing what naturally felt right. But right, we consider that to be something to be shameful in a purity culture.
Just because I thought about it, there is no other, well, there is actually a place where it is occurring today, but forget her name. I actually don't want to use it because of what people may think that her thoughts or beliefs are, but oh, is Sarah Silverton? Sarah Silver Silverman? She is one of a collection of females that ironically were the canary in the coal mine, as it said, which would discuss these things, right? That are actually being looked at as being an impure, like they land base these individuals now who are just basically saying these true things, right? Like pillows and couches and corners and seats and et cetera, listen, my giggling is about if I could give you like on top of all those stories, so many different things that young males would like to put their penises inside of that no one wants to discuss, but only male. So what I'm saying there is that there are male comedians who are not received as being impure for that conversation. But why is it the case when a female wants to talk about that, your ideas come up, right? There's this consistent portion of fear and shame. And I'm going to put my finger on religion. I will today. I'm going to put my finger on religion as the reasoning for that. That's where it comes from. And if you back up and say, well, if you're going to use that claim, that that's the reason for it, well, it will come down to this either or synopsis of creation versus Big Bang, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm fine with that. But I'm just telling you where I would sit on it, that man has created religion, and then religion has imposed these things, in my personal opinion, arrogantly on top of society as to what is right and what is wrong, to the point where we've got to this point where the Sarah Silverman is going to make these jokes. The whole audience goes wildly approving, but in an online world, you're going to have a number of people who will see that action of truths being told as being impure. And I want to know, to your point of it, you know, of that, I want to know, maybe you have some insight into that. Is there any other place? Like, why, where did that come from?
Well, right. I mean, so that only does come from everything I, you know, this about past week and a half prepping for this, found it all does come back to religion and scripture in books written for female etiquette and the whole scenario of these things being impure.
Just think about this word you just used there. Who decides female etiquette? What the fuck does that mean? Right? It's such a, what? Female etiquette?
Yeah.
Oh man. Sorry, I had to cut you there, but that's like gross language. You know, is there such things as male etiquette? Yeah, I guess, you know, there's conversation based upon that, but I don't know why I get itchy when I hear that for female etiquette, like how to be the best female possible. What? You know, and if that's a subordinate, best female possible for, and I'm sorry, my brain is also broken because my wife and I just finished watching story Shiny Happy People, the documentary on the Duggars, the 19 kids and counting thing, and all the horrible stuff from fundamentalism that comes from that. Because that's where it leads, I believe, is whenever this conversation comes up of like, well, how should a female be in society? What are you honestly asking that question? Because you need to know where that comes from. That's from a subordination or an oppressive concept as to how they're supposed to fit into that hierarchy. Sorry, take the wind out of that one, but that's just, that's gross.
Yeah. But to that point, there are like of many books that are given to adolescent girls on how to remain pure, how to be a good wife, right? We talk about traditional culture or the return to traditional culture that we're seeing today. They're still centered around a lot of those religious beliefs.
Is there, do you know of, or I probably need to do more research on that, because I wrote down as a second point to consider where that does create this connections of our conversation of sex education and physical education. So both of those actually intersect. Now, if no one's aware of this fact, you could listen to Fitness and Youth podcast. We discussed this over and over of this cross section where we've gone to this cognitive revolution and young kids are not being taught about the physical capabilities, what they're aware of. And that's basically now almost non-existent. Okay. So if it used to be like 30% of all public education in 1998, it is now like 5%. Okay. Now I'm not lying when I give you that number, right? It's 5% of public education where a focus is on something that we consider like the vitality model. So don't send me back bullshit on like, well, my kid's in a sport program. That's a sport program. That's not physical education, right? Where they learn about patterns and aerobic conditioning and eating real food and thinking clear thoughts and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So if you do have that in place, do you think there's a role possibly for the future fix there where sex education and physical education can intertwine again? So there's two questions in there. Do you know of any data about how much, for example, in grades 6, 7, or 8, kids are learning about, let's call it these, the, I'm afraid to even use the word, natural concepts of sex? Not sex the act, but also sex the
I am trying to find that out. I don't
okay.
know.
Well,
There isn't, I mean, I don't know how much it goes into it. I know,
Natalie
like,
does it.
at least within like California, there is the California Healthy Youth Act that requires that sexual education be appropriately used for all students and genders. But I don't know exactly how much goes into that
Yeah, so we
anymore.
have to see. Well, I'm going to take that down as a little bit of a project by myself as to, I mean, and I know I'm just saying this out loud to myself too. I'm certainly not going to go to, a political pundit or a podcaster to find this information, because they're just going to tell me, we're either like all impure people and we need to go back to church. Or they're going to tell me that, the government is coming for your kids and they want to transgender everyone. That's the only two stories you're going to get. So I got to do my research on that. I'm going to make an assumption though that it's actually taught less. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think it's probably the case?
Yes.
Okay. So if that is the case, maybe there's a little bit of an area in here, right? Because we are private institutions, right? We're not public institutions.
And I know it is like state by state has different regulations on what actually has to be taught in class.
Okay.
Oh.
Well, maybe I'm just trying to bring up a concept of, these biological, natural occurring things, right? Because they are biological, that are going to occur in sexual development, right? So this is the story, right? The quote unquote, the book in the class opens up. Listen, you're going to change tremendously over the next 5 years, and we're going to take 3 or 4 years to discuss all those changes. And you're going to think differently. Do you see that? So this is where you're not going to be told what to think, right? You're going to be taught how to think. So the what to think is the traditional model, i.e., if you think these thoughts, you'll go to purgatory. That or the other option is if you think these thoughts, you have full freedom to think whatever you want. That's also an overreach, I think. There has to be some language in terms of the middle zone. It's probably not a middle zone, but something in the middle there around that. And I think maybe, I'm just throwing it out, I'm not sure your thoughts on that. Why couldn't we involve, because of that word biology, why couldn't we involve some kind of overconnection between physical manifestations and physical expression, right? You and I deal in the physical world all the time. Prior to this call today, you were talking about a consultation with a female on her sexual health. Right? I mean, this is the shit that you and I have discussed for years, right? So why shouldn't there be some education early on that would cross that over? Do you think that's a possibility as just like a thought process,
I think it
or
is a
in trouble?
possibility. It is something that it comes up almost in every sales consult I have when we're meeting someone for the first time, is that physical expression is one of the few things that we never learn about in school, but we're expected to just simply understand, right? We meet people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s that don't understand the value or why they should do this other than as a way to lose weight, because we just don't learn about it.
Yeah, and I think I bring it up because I know that with all the, quote unquote chatter out there of like fixing America, it always comes back to, oh, we got to get people back to churches and we've got to, build families. And as like admirable and as positive as that could be for a whole generation of people to come, I actually think it'll end in a nightmare. That's just my own personal opinion, if that's the only thing we focus on. And again, I said it with you many times before, it's just because it's an unrealistic output, it's an unrealistic outlook relative to the future, i.e., higher cost for education, higher cost to own a home, higher cost to, have a bunch of kids. There's no such thing. Everyone wants to talk a big talk on single family or single household income or like family income, et cetera. That's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen, right? unless all those other things, wealth gap changes, et cetera, all occurs, it's not going to occur. So this is the precipice that I'm at with regards to trying to come up with some ideas. Well, and that's why I say if we overlap sex education and physical education and a rebirth of that in grades 6, 7, and 8, imagine what we can turn around, right? Imagine we could turn all those young kids into knowing these things, right? And it doesn't mean that they're going to end up being atheists, but they're certainly going to be like questioning a lot of things, right? They're allowed to ask those questions. They're not going to be told, no, you can't have those thoughts, right? Or think this way. No, they're going to be like, well, you're open to those thoughts and you're going to talk it out. And the more you talk it out, the more you're going to learn.
And I think it's like if we go back just, generationally of where sex education came in, it was mostly taught as a way to deter like children from having sex, right? If we educate them on sex, they're less likely to have unprotected sex, they're less likely to catch sexual transmitted diseases, right? We're coming out of like
Yeah, it was
AIDS and
always fear.
right.
Always
So
fear.
right,
Yep.
but that was the major push there was largely to prevent unwanted transmission of disease versus education on just understanding your body and why it functions the way it does.
Yep. Yeah, it's so interesting because they could have actually, ended up with the same things, right? Like looking around, realizing there actually is sexually transmitted disease. There actually is an increase in pregnancy. Okay, if that's the reality, maybe just take like one or two steps back from how people are ending up that way. And maybe not putting your thumb over these birth control capabilities or accessibility to it. Or maybe say, well, isn't the culture building this, right? What, why are our young kids promiscuous? Why not take a 10-year study of that, right? Maybe there's nothing else in their lives that they seem to be excited about. Maybe ask that, or you can even get into darker areas and say, let's say they're both 18 and they have a kid. Why is that so bad for society? If it's only so bad because they can't afford it, that's not their fault because it's a natural process. Do you see my point? It's like, well, so I think they only needed to take one or two steps backward, but no, they went 10 steps back. And be like, oh, we can't have this happen. So we got to put our thumb down on whatever that is going to be that's going to lead to those things that may, quote unquote, get kids, not on the straight and narrow based upon those beliefs. I've only brought those up to think about, yeah, the because it, it's it's I don't know, but that purity culture concept is not going to be fixed. Like, I think only adults will have conversations about it, but only adults with preteens are the only hope we have of fixing it. Or, because I know, a bunch of 12-year-olds are not listening to this today. So that means that an adult brain will get this, whether it's a coach of someone or they are someone who has a preteen, you're going to have discussions. Or because if it's not, I was saying, it's not happening with quote unquote home role modeling, because well, I just finished reading a book, America and the Art of What's Possible, which is a great book, but it always finishes with these, in my opinion, not so good solutions to all the problems, right? It's the ones that I just told you about. We need to go back to church. We need to build families. We need to decentralize income. It's like, how about you be realistic, right? Like, have you been on TikTok lately? Do you know what Twitter is? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just, it's an unrealistic expectation based on what we talked about earlier, sexual images and the accessibility for it, how these brains are different based upon that. So that's why I don't think it's going to be fixed in the home. I don't think the government's going to fix it. I think it may have to take place in education or in education grades 5, 6, 7, 8. You can just imagine all these kids, right? Have full-on physical education, whatever you and I determine as the purest form of like physical challenges and knowledge around it, et cetera. But they're also taught about the birds and the bees in the exact same class. And there's this crossover, right? Of like, this is just biological differences, right? And they could put all the shit that you and I, discuss, but turns into charts and shit on the board, right? Males, females, but there's this overlap. Now let's talk about the overlap. Let's talk about essential differences. But let's also talk about these overlapping things that adults want to like berate you on, right? Let's say this is the most important thing and everything's equal. Well, there is equality, but it looks like this in two different lenses from males and females, right? And these are the things we got to contend with. I think that would be a much, not sure if you had any, ever had any like pipe dream thoughts on that or where you would fit in on it.
No, I mean, this conversation has come up with another one of our coaches is very passionate about like youth fitness
Okay.
as well, right? And just
Do they listen to our podcast?
I
Gosh.
don't know. He probably actually does. He actually probably does.
Okay, good.
But you know, I think this is like we would hit so many less obstacles even within children in sport if kids were educated on physical expression. I
Yeah.
think we would see over, I'd see potentially see less overreaching like injuries in females if they actually learned about physical expression, right? Like
Yeah.
if instead of like, you know, telling the soccer player that she needs to play less soccer, she actually learned the value of like why we would do some type of strength training instead of just doing 7 days of soccer every single week and breaking our body down. Or
Yeah.
when we come to the conversations around how to properly fuel and nourish ourselves, feel our best, maybe those like there'd be less of the issues we see now when I see someone at 20 of having to unpack all these misconceptions about food and calories and all these things if we just actually learned this stuff in middle school.
Yeah, you
Maybe
give hope
I
there
would see
to the.
less girls reaching for birth control as a way to fix menstrual problems and cramping and all the symptoms that they experience because they don't have good food hygiene.
Yeah, two things. You give lots of good hope in my brain, anyways, to like the development of like what to do Monday to Sunday that doesn't involve the sport program. So that's great. You kind of highlight the things that I've always talked about on principles. That's why it's kind of like, you know, nice for my brain to hear that. You know, like everyone plays like all these females, they all gather and play soccer on Monday. They're not a part of a club though. Because why? Because on Tuesday, everyone goes swimming. And then what do we do on Wednesday? We all go rock climbing. And then what are we doing? You see what I'm saying? But that breaks people's brains because it doesn't fit with the adult sitting on the sidelines drinking their alcohol as their kid plays on Sunday and they're burnt out from 5 years of soccer to going 7 days a week. Do you see what I'm saying? Like that just breaks the whole brain mold. This is what we talk about on Fitness and Youth Podcast, by the way, so you can tell your friend to do that. But secondly, imagine if just as a thought process, imagine if all those young males were taught about birth control. Imagine that, right? Because couldn't you see the things play out over time too, of like males being adequately competent on, when they're grade 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the whole time on like, listen, this is, and they have to go through the whole repertoire of books that I went through, right? All 13 of them. No, honestly, right? From like Mary Wollstonecraft all the way up to Louise Perry, where they're like, you have to learn this because if you don't know the other, you will never be able to appreciate, number one, your innate things that are going on in your head, but all the shit that we have imposed to lead them to come up with these decisions, right? Instead of just being like, yeah, I don't understand. My sister's on birth control to control her acne. You will never say that again as a young boy who is like 12 or 13, right? You're going to challenge the notion of it's like, you know, here's the things in play. These are the things that, you know, you can come up with, or solutions that we can come up with basically. So I just thought of it. Just imagine if you changed not only, because when you talk about those things, I think that's great for females, but I don't think it'll end up being the overall change that we want to see unless all those males are educated on that topic as well. I don't know. Your thoughts on that, of what it would lead to, or?
No, I agree. I think if males were educated on that too, it's like we would see, I think just the trickle effect of that would be healthier marriages, healthier children, because both parents are educated on the way their partner's body works and reproductive health. You know, I think it would eliminate a lot of the conversations we're having today of it not being equal of who carries the burden of pregnancy, because both parents would be aware of what's going on in the process. It'd be less stress around conception because, right, men would understand when a woman ovulates in a monthly cycle. So I never think anything bad comes from education. You know, I can't play out any bad scenario that would occur from both boys and girls learning this in school.
I don't know. I just think about these things as being such, I mean, it just makes so much sense to fix an entire generation's concepts. Like, cause I see what's at play today and all the struggles and the issues and et cetera. And, but I do see some shining light moments of two or three people out of 100. And I always say, why don't they have those problems? And do you know why? Is because they're educated and they were educated on those things. So that's why I'm like, don't you think it's a good idea that the other 97 out of 100 should learn those things? That will never get you to those points. It will never put you in this like therapeutic concept from the age of 25 to 55, right? Which is like, oh, I'm going to fix this shit. I got to do this new diet. Oh, I'm going to do this Botox. I got to do this cream. You know, where does that come from? Your lack of education from not only you, but your partner. So then your partner goes, I don't know if that's the solution. I think this could be the solution. You know, like you have someone to work with you based upon that. Because maybe as a female, you weren't as quote unquote educated on it. You just kind of like did the steps, you know. I was 13, this would happen, started birth control, got to here, need to change when I was 16, weight gain issues, had depression, tried to play a sport, working it all together, huge fracture at 17, gained weight, went to university. Like, you know, this whole story that plays out for millions of people could all have been fixed, right? It could have been fixed if you had on the other side all of those males that were like, listen, I know we're different and I appreciate that. And I see the strength in that difference, right? Of the things that we talked about in life coaching with masculine, feminine differences and stuff, right? The strength in variance of the female, the strength in chaos in females or in femininity, right? There's strength in that, right? That's what creates so many different things in creation and expression, et cetera, that cannot be repressed. You can't pill that. You can't societally numb that. You got to let it like, you got to let the boobs hang out. I don't know any other way to say it, you know, without, of course, that those boobs hang out grade seven, because I wouldn't go to school, but you get my point based upon that. So we were previously talking about if we're talking to a parent or teen. So I want you to drum up some ideas, because I do have some that I just wanted to like lay out. But if you were speaking to the parent of a teen, right? Meaning like if we're speaking to a coach who is a parent of a preteen right now, or if we're speaking to, because we're not speaking to preteens right now, some may be listening. Hi, hope this is not too much. forget the whole, after I said hymen, just turn it off. So if we're speaking to the parent of a teen, what would you, you know, say to them? And I took down four things that I would say. I would inform them, and I'm not only going off like what I've, you know, it just kind of landed in my lap. I didn't have parents come into me and sit across the desk and I'm like, you know, ooh, I can't wait to get into this discussion. It just kind of like landed there. I would certainly, first and foremost, especially in modern times, talk to young people today about how easy it is to get accessible, unrealistic images online around what sex and mating is. And I would have a really open-ended discussion on that, meaning like I would say it in these terms. Listen, sweetie, there is an abundance of ways for you to get access to unrealistic sex and mating, you know, videos and pictures and et cetera. And the reason why I call it unrealistic, because that's not real life. but I'm not gonna repress the conversation around telling you that. I don't want to tell you that, oh, you know, look away from that stuff. That's also unrealistic. So I would first of all start with that. Secondly, I would discuss some uncomfortable topics based upon, you know, depending upon your child's capability of handling this. I generally like stepwise slowly in that conversation, which ends up in them by the time they're 21 discovering, you know, genital mutilation and circumcisions and all the darker, disgusting aspects of societal beliefs as to how we should handle our sexual parts. But I think that conversation needs to happen at that age. Now, not the way that I just said it, but it needs to softly start down that road. Like there's certain sects, SECTS, there's certain people in certain geographies around the world, even in our country, that believe these things. And they do it to repress our natural sexual urges. Okay. And then if you're like, listen, I know my kid most, they can't handle that, then you need to find out your own like entry level to that conversation. And the more and more that that gets withheld, you're going to have a host of issues of sexual confusions and diversion tactics that they build up just to navigate society by the time they're 18. And you do not want to be sending a young person off into the world with those false notions. Okay. Third, I would talk about the burdens around pregnancy before pair bonding and before economic stability. And those are realities which don't, you're not telling them answers. You're not saying, well, this is what'll end up happening, you know, because the classic story that I remember my sisters basically mom would just put the fear of God in them. That if it ended up happening, like, you know, the house would burn down or something, like, you know, shit would just explode. And I would suggest against that. What I would suggest is everyone having an open conversation around the true burdens. And when I talk about burdens, I guess that needs to be opened up depending upon the person's knowledge, but the burdens of pregnancy prior to pair bonding and prior to economic stability. And now you're going to have, and I know people who are wise enough to think this way. Yeah, of course, this is what's going to end up happening. You're going to end up recognizing and looking around today, like I am, more and more going, why would you ever want to bring kids into this world? This is what you're now. I'm willing to just throw that out there. And I'm not afraid to discuss what a lot of people are going to be thinking for the next 20 or 30 years, but that is what it is, right? At least you're being realistic around it. And then lastly, like we discussed before, I would talk about self-pleasure, and you know, all the things that are inside of that. For males and females, of course, it gets quite specific and quite individualized, right? Like I mentioned earlier. I can't remember, geez, when I learned it. I think it was my sister actually gave me education on this in my early teens around, you know, in biological terms. The hymen's positioning and how either a tampon or sexual intercourse may not break it or may not rupture it, you know. And to me at that time, you know, just whatever, you know, your brain is thinking, I'm like, this is actually, as I'm saying, and I'm probably like, why I'm so interested and curious around biology is like I found that humanly unbelievable. Like it was mind-blowing to me because remember, up until that time, a scripture said, this is what it meant, right? And the preciousness and what it means and et cetera. It's like evil and breaking shit and you know, anyways, so that needs to be talked about at a young age, just like I was, you know, given the education at the right timing based upon what self-pleasure was for a male and all the thoughts and stuff that went on with that. So I think that this needs to happen. Like that kind of conversation as number four needs to happen, I would say, before number three is achieved. So, you know, before you want to get into the conversation possibly on the burdens around pregnancy before pair bonding and economic stability, you do want to have that. And I'm not sure if, you know, it's for you and I to decide upon what's the answer to that, but there has to be a place in there for, you know, self-pleasure in place of sexual intercourse, for the conversation of like the burdens that could come with that if it's not at a safe level with consent that, you know, leads to doesn't lead to pregnancy. Any thoughts on those numbers or?
I think number four is almost like number one to me, because I think if we had better education on self-pleasure, the creativity of our brains, and learned that at a young age, maybe there would be a less likelihood of needing to reach for the internet to create imagery around these things.
Do you think that that's the case for you and I because we're biased from our fear and shame that we observed when we were younger?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think right there's like a new kind of like awakening of like people again that are like, I stopped watching porn and like refell in love with my brain
True.
and I'm happier in my relationship. Right. So I think that's like number one. And I just like, I think the self-pleasure is just so important, especially for parents with female daughters, because I think so much shame happens, or so much bad sexual experiences happen for young females because they don't know what is normal, right? Or what they should get out of a sexual relationship. So I think if we really wanted to, as parents, or parents wanted to best set our children up for success, it's like we talk to boys about how to self-pleasure, or right, that whole, you know, like dads have those conversations much more common. And moms have that conversations with their female daughters, most likely because their mothers never had it with them. But I think it would save a lot of young girls bad sexual relationships and experiences if they knew what self-pleasure was supposed to, or what pleasure was, what sexual pleasure was supposed to be.
So if it's not going to happen in the home in the future for definitely a lot of people, and it's not going to happen in the school, I would just like to add that males should also be taught for both about male and female pleasure. I think it adds to their, it's not for purposes of adding to the repertoire. But it certainly adds a gratitude and appreciation for the massive discrepancy, honestly, between male and female self-pleasure. Because up until, gosh, I don't know, late teens, I thought it was the exact same. Like, and this may sound obviously at 50, I know the difference now. Well, I sure should hope I do. Maybe I don't. Anyways, you know, I thought it was the same way, where it's like, oh, they must, you know, quote unquote, without becoming too vulgar online, doing the action. And then, like, there's like, ah, you know, no, it's not the same. So I think at a young age, young boys need to get that same knowledge of what you're speaking about. And I think the more complex and un the understanding that becomes, it is actually more helpful for males. It's more helpful to understand the complexity around that. The mind connection to it, the previous thoughts that one may have about it. What I was fascinated by, not to get too, you know, into it, but you know, I found it unbelievably fascinating, was the variances in the zones of pleasure. And the deeper ability, I think, anyways, I could be wrong, that females have to those multiple different zones, and how there's different stimulations for different zones and different outcomes. And like this, to me, that was like the highlighting moment of appreciation. Do you see? It wasn't a highlighting moment of like, you know, oh, how do I wrap my hands around this? It's like, no, that's an unbelievable appreciation to have.
I mean,
It
I know
creates a respect then.
this goes off, you know, off topic here, but to so many of the things we discuss about in therapeutics, it's like if we understood these principles, or we understood how our bodies worked, it's like maybe we would be less likely to reach for therapeutics for the problems we think we have, right? We've talked about this with like male sexuality and Who told you that, like, what was a typical penis size, or that your penis was smaller, that we needed right? We needed to take medication to have longer lasting erections. Like, who told you that this is what your partner wanted, or that the second that you got into bed with someone, that right, that we should already be pre-lubricated because that's just what you saw in porn, right? Like, these misconceptions, if it's we actually understood how bodies worked, what the right to the different levels of pleasure, or like, you know, for a boy and a, I don't know, if we just understood this not from a standpoint of right or wrong, but simply this is what arousal looks like for a female. This is how long it can typically take a female to become aroused. These are the different things. It's like, wow, you're not going to see that on the internet. You're not going to see that in porn.
Yeah. And they're not getting it in the home.
No.
So if they're not
But
getting in the home, they're
there's
not getting
this.
in the school, you know, how does that, you know, that was the point I was making on, like, it's just a bunch of 40-year-olds and 50-year-olds having discussion as to how to fix the
A
world.
book in the library that is no longer allowed to be in the library because it is inappropriate for children to learn how their bodies work.
Yeah, listen, once it becomes quote unquote political and someone's like, oh, you know, the media hears that it could be political, it's just it's over. I mean, it's useless now. It's like a topic that you just throw out. You can't even have an honest conversation inside of there because you'll get overreaching from both sides, you know. You'll get an overreaching of people who are like, they're there. I do want to have those books in, and then they overreach with the concepts of what are inside those books, and then you get the people who just want to burn them all. That's what you get instead of like a conversation around, well, what do we call age appropriateness? What is our fundamental beliefs in the school? Right? Beliefs meaning like, what does the principal believe? Does the principal believe that we were all formed 6,000 years ago? Well, now we got a problem. Right? Now we got an essential larger problem. And if it brings up those things, then that's fine and good. But I don't think that's going to end up being a collective positive improvement for the future. And the other thing, based upon your point, is how well did that turn out? The whole process of, we could just take it from a male's perspective, to basically tell all these hypersexualized males to repress that for like decades. How well did that turn out? All you want to do now is therapeutic that, like wrap it backwards with erectile dysfunction stuff or Ozempic or all these biohacking things, right? That's what you think your answer is to it, and you think that's progressive, right? That by saying that, it makes it seem like, you know, that there's this overarching rules that society believes is in place, right? And I'd like to know again where that came from, right? Because that's you're really thinking that 15-year-old needs to repress the thoughts that they have around their friend's mom, right? And if you're like, oh my gosh, they should, if you initially hear that and say, oh, they should never have the thoughts about their friend's mom, you were the problem. Where did you get those ideas, right? Are you gonna say, you know, stones covet your wife, except, man, you need to back up. You need to like do some education. You need to have, you know, in your gym, there needs to be like the Milky Way photos and the universe photos and archaeological find photos and like man and woman equals human on your board. That's what you need to have in your fucking gym, right? Because you need to tie it back to a biological, you know, standing that gets us to this point. And if you don't have that conversation, I can't see, quote unquote, especially in this digital modern age where we're going to have honest conversations with young people about purity. Like, what is purity? Right? Where are they ever going to hear that? I don't know. You know, I don't know. Again, to point out on fitness and youth, Daniel and I discussed this, these theoretical concepts of like coming up with these, you know, structured areas in public education for physical expression. We discussed the concepts of the male and female differences in physical expression for young people. This podcast, what we do, I appreciate it because we will discuss the social ramifications of the differences in males and females and like how it creates practice in fitness and physical expression. And all that to say that You know, all there is ideas. There's no answers on it, but we can't turn our back on at least having the conversation as to what our beliefs are on what is right and wrong about this concept of purity in this digital world. I'm not saying we still may get to an answer on that, because I'm still confounded by, like, if we still want this freedom of, like, expression, quote unquote, in the online world. I just think it's going to be, and I just think of the young male. I just think how, I don't know how you're gonna get those males, like, turned around to just not want to see that. Because it just plays so heavy on their innate needs. I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I don't. I
Besides an
mean,
authoritarian, like, regime of North Dakota or whatever, Montana, you know, TikTok.
banning.
I don't know, whatever state that is trying to ban it.
No, I mean, I don't think we're gonna be able to keep kids completely off the internet forever. Like, I don't think that's the answer. I don't think it's going to work. I know it's a simple answer to say, don't let your kids go on the internet. But like that's like impossible again. They'll always find a way.
Yeah,
So
I was to keep going black-pilled on that. I listened to someone discuss just some of the current consequences of the new laws that they're imposing that are kind of sneakily around surveillance and data of Americans. And one of the languages that came from these people that are, quote unquote, like, sensitive to these things occurring, is that they speak to the public on a podcast. They're like, listen, this looks like it's just, like, floating through Congress. This is what it means to you. They said data is the new oil. That like knocked me over with regards to just how important it is, based on our conversation today and us having a concern around, like, young people and what they see and what they have access to. This is the new challenge that we're going to have in the next 20 years, is that in all these freedoms and justices that we talk about in America, you also are going to have the freedom to basically be surveilled and capitalized on, and your attention is going to be number one thing, and all your data is going to be the new form of currency. Oil used to be the case, and now it's going to be data. Everyone can make so much money just on the transactions through the data and watching your every move. So I just think about that, unfortunately, on top of, like, how. That's why I keep thinking of that young. I keep thinking of that young boy, and, like, I'm talking to him in my brain metaphorically, but nothing is getting through, because I can't control, besides, like, and listen, I actually like the conversation, because I do have some friends who are parents of young boys who just pull it away. They're like, I'm just not going to give them access. That's fine. I mean, but I am empathetic to why they do that. I am empathetic because I don't know any other way around it. I don't, you
I mean,
know.
I think there that's like the small population of people that we talk to, right? That are just like, I'm pulling it away, but I'm also educating my child, right? Like, I think that's the
That's
tip of the spear. It's like we can't pull it away and then preach purity culture, because I think
yeah.
that's key for disaster. I think it's
Good
like, if we're gonna pull it away, then we
point.
also have to play the role of being the educator
Yep.
to set these youth up for success. It's
Yep.
like no different than the parent that says, we're going to eat super clean. You're never going to have a piece of sugar, but we're not going to ever like teach you anything. Then I'm going to send you to college and you're going to like binge out on everything because I never got to try all these foods and now I want to eat everything. Right. Because it wasn't my decision. You were just told me this is how it was going to be. So I think that's, we can make the solution of limiting the amount of time we allow our kids on the internet, but there has to be great education behind that.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I say it out loud, but in my practices, I do that, right? The accessibility and the hours and all that is all tracked, not surveilled. You know, they're still privately allowed to do what they want to do, but there's also education, especially for my girls, on, like, this is, you know, what they want you to purchase, and this is why they will do those things. And I feel okay, because they're at the point now where they're like, oh, this is kind of sneaky. Do you see what they're trying to do there? So I know that they're at that point where they can see it happening. So they're not oblivious to that world. So as I say those things, yeah, I'm talking about the majority, unfortunately. But I do agree with you that, yeah, that's a good notion, is like you are going to teach this in education, and you're also going to talk about the purity concept. You know, you're not just going to leave it out there. It's like, oh, anything goes. Like, no, there is this thing that exists out there based upon, you know, virtues, human virtues, right? Self-respect, respect of other people's space, respect of other people's thoughts. And then what those things mean, as we like, you know, to kind of summarize on what we're discussing, what we discuss on fitness and relations, what does that mean when males and females come together? You know, like we're just talking this individual mind developmental things, right? But there is going to come a point where those two things have to come together. And coming together with respect is going to be the I think the ultimate end goal. So yeah, you do give hope for that. If this was a last question to think about, I put down a couple of points as to how coaches can promote these ideas in their gyms or their places of worship, worshiping the body. I said number one, you'd want to teach autonomy even if you don't practice it. I mean, we've discussed this, but I just want to, if we're speaking to the public here, you know, even though you may not practice it with your clients, coach, I think it's very important that coaches do start to have the conversation on dependency and autonomy and willingness to do stuff on their own over time. And then you decide upon dates, right? And graduations. And even if you don't get there, at least you're going to have the conversation. Number two, as I mentioned previously, stick to your beliefs, right? That's what I talked about, having the Hubble space coat, you know, Hubble space pictures up on the wall, you know, an archaeology timeline, you know, man and woman equals human, like whatever. Stick to your beliefs, but also be open to other people's beliefs, right? That's what we do want to have, right? We don't want to also be dogmatic in our thinking over in this lane. Number three, I thought about, you know, why don't we have classes or town hall meetings or whatever, Melissa, that are called Behave, right? Because we have three angles that we teach in OPEX, behavior, exercise, and nutrition. It's a lot easier, right, for us to tiptoe into exercise classes and everything about it, right? You know, VMO activation, the best bending patterns, decrease your back pain, all those kind of things. And then secondly, we find it a little easier. I would say OPEX has done a great job of that, like tiptoeing into positive nutritional things. But I think we're a little hesitant because we feel we don't maybe have the self-confidence to start talking about behavior and to open up in the gym a softer method or hard, depending upon how close you are to your clients. Right? Of the things we talked about today, right? Why don't we talk about that? A conversation on contractual agreements in marriage. Start there. Where does that come from? Who decided upon that? The history of it. What do we mean when we say pair bonding? Right? What do we mean when we say reciprocal altruism? What are we talking about when we say those things, right? So have that. And then of course it, you know, down the road, they can see on lesson number 25, in like week 12, where they're like, oh my gosh, I think we're going to talk about masturbation for young people. Leave that as like number 25 and then get there. And then I thought number four would be discuss our conversation of the differences between, you know, generalized conversation and what we call norms, i.e., like when you're talking about a big collective whole of people, and then how that's different than when we talk about very descriptive and individualized stuff. Now, I know you're a master of that because you do it like with your consults all the time, and you may not even know you're aware of that, but this is what, you know, good coaches do over time. They'll say things like, well, generally, you know, this is how things occur, but for you, this is what's best. Do you see how I use the generalized terminology and then I made it very individualized? I think that in the topic we're talking today of purity or impurity would go over well inside the gyms. Anything you want to add to that, coaches could present to their peoples, or maybe email us to ask about how to start these strategies on Behave classes?
Yeah, I'd always say again, like to that point of the number three of the town hall being kind of scary. It always comes back down to your own competency, right? So I think for coaches, we had this conversation just recently with Carl and some OPEX mentors on like, what does long-term education look like for coaches and owners? And I think this is a part of it is, right, some of the books we've discussed on this podcast. Again, if you don't feel comfortable digging into some of these lanes, it's like, learn a little bit more for yourself. And let these resources be visible inside your gym, like the same way sticking to your beliefs and having, you know, the Milky Way on the wall. It's like, have these books out on the shelf of the gym. A great way to have education conversations. You have a consult with a client and you're talking about, how do I navigate discussing masturbation with my female daughter? Well, hey, like, you don't have to take the resource, but at least it's on your bookshelf because you believe it's something investigating. Right. So I would say it's the same way we have menstrual products in our gym bathroom. Conversation starts with visibility. So just like, you know, having these things visible inside your facilities can be a great introduction into these conversations.
Yeah, I love it. Just trying to build in my mind whether it goes anywhere or gets anything. Just that, like, the, I guess we're always building upon right? The perfect gym setting, you know? And, I don't know. Do you think that probably could be an area that not just OPEX gyms, but the quote unquote micro gyms community, you know, place over time, you know, that vision probably has a little bit higher strength in Behave as a part of the triad?
Yeah.
You know, I think it might be, am I wrong in assuming that I think we might be, not then that we missed the boat, but we probably need to be focusing a whole lot more on that one, that area. Yeah.
Or that's the continued unique thing about OPEX and OPEX gyms, right? It used to be what made us unique was our conversations or our approach to nutrition and lifestyle. We're like, and I think it's great that it's becoming more mainstream to discuss all the principles that we've been talking about for a very long time. But I think Behave is still a very, is something no other gym is discussing or digging into with their clients.
Yeah. So essentially, maybe they'll have fitness in relation episodes on replay, you know, over time, just blaring in the gyms in the future to discuss that. That'll be their quote unquote education. Last point that this is something that I just had a conversation with Carl about that actually a couple of weeks ago, that is something that I do appreciate with what we do, but also something to think about for the future of, you know, what movement looks like for a human and what physical expression is going to look like for the human. And I think, you know, what we do in fitness and relations, and let's call it 60 to 75 minutes of talking of a specific concept, you know, you got to remember that humans could be on the other side listening to that, but exercising, you know, so it's a beautiful variable actually in there, if you look at it, because it actually will, it speaks of what we've discussed numerous times, that the intensity and the volume will dictate the pace. Meaning, like, if you can't listen to us for 60 to 75 minutes and do what you're doing for exercise, you could be doing it wrong. So that's something to think about there. But you see how it ties in what we may want to have in the future for autonomous humans, that, yeah, I'd love people to like listen and learn things while they're doing activity. It'll be less audio, less visual. It'll be more audio style stuff, right? Because how many people can exercise while they watch the Super Bowl? You know, and I know people may find that stupid or redundant or like asinine, but the reason is because it's visual.
Mm-hmm.
So are they really learning anything? Or are they just being entertained and pleasured? So that's something to end on in terms of what you and I share that I'm grateful for, that people could just listen in and go for a nice walk and kind of comprehend things. As my brain says that, you know what I'm thinking is like, you know, because I know I do it, I'll sometimes listen to 1.5 times speed. And yes, I won't lie, I've listened to 2 times speed before. It's like I'm coming to the church to you to get like holy water thrown on me for all these sins I've committed of learning. I think we may have to have longer podcasts just so people could like speed it up because I know they're going to, right? You thought about that? Do you how what's your speed at?
You've got me to 1.5.
Oh,
I
good.
didn't think it was doable. When
Yeah.
I admit, when I first tried it, I was like, this is just, he's crazy. but now I
Bro.
can't not live at
You know,
1.5.
fitness and philosophy actually has a t-shirt that says 1.0 times is much better than 1.5 times. Because Robbie Gustin is a purist on it.
I can see
I
that.
always, I mean, I give it to him. I mean, there's a lot in that though. Do you know what I'm saying? It seems like it's trite, but there's a lot in that, right? Just relax, you know, let the words come out. And this is what I think about when I listen to it at 1.0, is that imagine all the things that you can focus on and get done while that's happening, right? So you see, you're learning and doing at the same time, learning and moving, learning and moving. Yeah. Anyways, something for people to think of. Anyhow, to recap, background, again, I'm appreciative of just being able to find, I guess, what we call like a lane where, you know, two trainers, could, you know, have a conversation, an armchair, you know, conversation on, you know, purity culture and where it fits into the physical expression landscape. And if we believe that fitness is, you know, a right for people, the ability to be able to learn about how to like move for their whole life and sustain themselves, where this particular topic today fits in is that there is this overlapping thing in how people are going to behave when males and females come together and when all humans come together. And the more we could learn about those specific things, you know, rules that we were told is which we were supposed to behave, how we're supposed to behave, what we're supposed to do about specific thoughts that we have, defining, you know, the right and wrong around those thoughts and how they're presented. I think it's, I'm always appreciative of us being able to have those conversations. Those are the things I'll reflect upon. How about you for today?
Yeah, I'm going to continue to reflect on, and I'm excited to dig into more of what does sexual education look like today. I think the more we talk about these topics and put it out there, what the future could look like, more realistic that future becomes. So that's where my homework is going to be today is actually on a positive note, like looking more into what this blend of physical expression and sexual education could be.
Yeah, we can have the Let's Get Physical shirts just run rampant, right? Because it can mean so many different things, right? The Olivia Newton-John, tights, and you know, you can have that thought. You could also think about the meaning physical expression at the same time. All right, thanks for today, Melissa, as always, and we'll chat with everyone next time.
Bye.